Welcome back to the show. Nick DiGilio here. I'm your overnight dude, 2 to 5 a.m. weekday mornings. Steve Grzanich in the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6. All right. I'd like to welcome to the show my guest, Mike Oswald. He is the author of Your Guide to the National Parks, which is an incredible book that is a complete guide, an absolutely complete guide to all 58 national parks in the country. He's an outdoorsman. He's traveled all over the place, and we got to hear his story, and we'll hear all about this. And, you know, this is a great time of year. Obviously, it's summer. You guys are planning on doing some trips and going around the country. And this is an economical way to see amazing stuff and save money and see beautiful things. And we welcome Mike to the show. Mike, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Nick. It's good to be here.
Thanks, man. Okay, I understand that this all started because you didn't want to study engineering anymore. That wasn't your deal. Being an engineer wasn't something you wanted to do, and you just kind of just traveled, correct?
Yeah, I like to say I was jealous of the squirrels that I was watching outside my window when I was sitting at my desk. I'd just sit there and watch them, and I'd be like, man, I got to figure out how I can get that sort of freedom rather than being kind of chained to my computer all day.
Now, was when you decided, okay, that's it, I got to do that, I'd rather be outside, I'd rather be enjoying nature, did the idea to do a book on the national parks of America, did that pop into your head right away, or was that something that eventually came along?
No, that took a long series of events led to that, and it's kind of wild there. First thing I was planning on doing, I had a backup plan and a first plan that I had going to my mind because I wasn't sure if the first one would work out. First was to work for Doctors Without Borders. They like engineers for logisticians where you're kind of figuring out water, setting up camp and that sort of stuff.
Right.
Backup plan was to go to South America and do volunteer work for a year, just trying to find a bunch of places to volunteer. We get room and board in exchange for whatever I could do for them. And so I was taking Spanish for 2 years while working, and I went and interviewed for Doctors Without Borders, didn't get in. So then I went to Colombia in South America, ended up getting mugged and cut, and finger doesn't work. So I came back, had surgery. My mom was freaked out, and she's just like, get a job. And I'm not broke yet, Mom. So I decided to go to the parks, and she was happy that I was going to stay in the United States. And I just went park to park, and it all kind of fell together. Then after that, kind of fell in love with the United States and became more patriotic and just more environmentally conscious and more appreciative of everything we have here.
So the park, when you started to go to the national parks, what was the first one that you went to, Mike?
The first one that I went to was the Grand Canyon. That was just a little bit before all of that with some friends. But When I started this whole thing, the first one I went to was Mammoth Cave. It was kind of close in Kentucky, relatively close to you guys in Illinois. And, so hopped in a cave. They've got this cool wild cave tour you can go. And I wasn't extremely experienced outdoorsman at that point. And some things you kind of catch you off guard. Like for that one, I'm a pretty small guy, and they come around the desk when you get your ticket, and they actually measure you. They're measuring my waist. I'm like, it's gonna be that small on there? Like, yeah, I just gotta make sure you can fit.
Oh my god.
And through that thing, like, I lost the belt loop buckle while I was going through in Fat Man's Misery is one of the passages.
Oh no. It's called Fat Man's Misery?
Yep.
That's kind of daunting.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You get to experience pure darkness, and it's just it's kind of the last frontier probably for our planet is the subterranean passages.
Okay, you've been to how many? 48 of the 58 national parks, correct?
So right now I'm actually working on a second edition of this book. So I made another tour around the country, and now I'm up to 51, and there are 59 parks now. One was added just after this book went to print.
Which one was added?
Pinnacles in California. It's just south of San Francisco.
Okay. Now, do you have a favorite?
It's kind of, I like to say that's like picking your favorite child. Because there's so many of them are so good, and it kind of ends up being like whatever really great park I was to last. But I think if I could pick anyone to just hang out or explore the backcountry, be Glacier in Montana, which is right on the border with Canada.
Mm-hmm. What's so great? What do you like so much about Glacier in Montana?
The mountains are just really, really big. They're prominent. They're not particularly high. Like in Colorado, you have a ton of 14,000 foot peaks. And even in the Sierra Nevada and California, you have highest point in the lower 48, Mount Whitney. But these, they're really sheer cliffs and just colorful. You have tons of green, tons of evergreens. The lakes are like this kind of aquamarine blue from all the glaciers. And it's just big, big scenery.
And now when you go to these, when you were doing this tour, when you've been to the national parks, do you sleep in a tent? Do you rough it as much as you can?
Yeah, it's pretty much exclusively in my tent. The first go around, it was almost all tent camping. And this go around, I actually became more efficient. And maybe I shouldn't say it because the parks don't like to keep doing it, but I slept in my car a ton. I kind of got a good setup in the back where I can go to the trailhead that I want to start out in the morning or the place that I want to see the sunrise in the morning and just park there. So then I wake up, take some pictures, and away I go, off I go hiking just to be really, really efficient. So I'm not wasting any time getting two places and taking down camp, setting up camp.
Do you go to a lot of these national parks by yourself? Have you traveled with friends or with someone else?
It's been almost all solo, too. So it's kind of like the parks are a pretty good place to meet people. You have a lot of like-minded, just kind of outdoorsy folk, and you meet people on the trails. But yeah, almost all my traveling. The first go-round, friends met up with me at a couple places. And that, it kind of slowed me down, too. Because I was thinking at that point, I'm starting to be cognizant of, like, my finances and time and everything. And you know, you're more into having fun, where I'm trying to go through and do everything in a sort of specific manner. But it's always it's good to see friends. And this time around, I had some family meet up with me at a couple of places. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, it is just me cruising around the country solo.
Now, the book is so full of information. I got to tell you, it's a pretty astounding piece of work, Mike. I have to tell you.
A lot of people think I was pretty foolish for taking on such a big project for my first thing, but I didn't know any better, really. This is a huge rabbit hole I got into, and like, once I got to the parks and saw how interesting they were and wanting to do more, and then once I started making a book and realizing like what I could do with the tools that I had access to, I'm just like, why don't I do that too? And just kept on snowballing.
Yeah, no, I can't even tell you. I mean, it's hard to even explain the amount of information and the amount of things in this book. Now, when you go to a national park to add to the book or to add things to the book, is there a routine that you have? Is there certain things that you need to cover? Because there's so many things in here. You got maps, you got where to stay, where to hike, what to do. You got historical stuff in here. You've got incredible photos. Is there a routine that you have to get so much information from each place that you go to?
Yeah, now I kind of flesh out a little plan before I go in. And this last round was tough because a lot of the parks were actually on fire. It was a really dry year last year. And when I was at Glacier was burning, North Cascades was burning, Crater Lake was burning, Kings Canyon was shut down. It was all on fire. The whole entrance was closed. So it kind of threw things for a loop, and I watched weather a little bit too, so that moves me around. I try to keep best lighting for pictures and everything. But yeah, I have a general plan of what I want to do, what I want to check out, what I want to reconfirm, what I want to get pictures of. And I do stick to the most popular sites because I figure that's what I want this to kind of be, the average visitor's guidebook, even though I go further than that. But, you know, I think that's probably the most important for people that are first being introduced to the parks, to see, like, the really big attractions, the ones that are most appealing, the ones, you know, that are the reasons that these places were preserved. So I do focus on that.
Yeah. Well, the book is just, it's just enough stuff in here. You can go anywhere you want in these national parks, and this thing will tell you what to do. I'm going to sneeze. I feel like I'm going to sneeze. Hang on.
Yo, let her rip.
There we go. I did. All right. The photographs themselves that are in the book, some astonishing stuff in this book. Did you shoot a lot of the photographs? And if not, where did you get some of them?
Yeah, so I'm the primary photographer, and this next one's going to be almost all me. But as part of like a kind of a deep thinker, and when I was getting done with it, I'm just like, maybe this was the easy part of making a book, was making it, and I'm trying to figure out how to sell it. And the quality of my pictures weren't great. Like, now I kind of pay attention to framing and lighting and everything. And before that, I was just kind of, you know, right place, right time if I ever got a good picture, and just by chance,
yeah,
was there snapping it. So I like, scoured Flickr and found, I think, over 100 people with, like, just regular people who took great pictures in the parks, and I'd ask them if I could use their photo in my book, and then I sent them all a free copy afterwards. So I figured I'd get copies of this in hands of people that use the park, and they'll have something to talk about too. They're like, and check it out, my picture's in here.
Oh yeah.
So get word of mouth going, kind of a little guerrilla marketing campaign,
sure.
I guess.
Yeah.
I did that, and then a couple of holes of places that I hadn't been to were filled with either photos from the National Park Service or Shutterstock.
Okay. All right, Mike, hang on, okay?
Yep, you got it.
All right, cool. We are talking with Mike Oswald, who is the author of an incredible book called Your Guide to the National Parks, and we'll talk a little bit about more about the national parks. We'll talk more about the book and some tips on how you know, how much money Mike ends up spending and how much you might end up spending on these trips, which are a lot more affordable than going to, like, you know, Disney World or some of the other big places where you're going to spend a ton of money. And this way you can actually see some beautiful stuff in this country. And we'll talk more with Mike coming up. How you doing, everybody? Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Tuesday morning, and we're here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich in the opening bell at 5. And I am talking to the author of a terrific book called Your Guide to the National Parks. And his name is Mike Oswald. And we're talking about all the tips and all the great things that you can do just by going to the national parks in this country. Mike, welcome back, man.
Hey, I'm still here. Good to be back.
You're here. Yes, cool. You have an interesting talking about over the course of 2 years that you spent more than 10,000 hours in front of your computer working on this project on the book, correct?
Yep.
And then, but wow. I love that I read a little story here that you actually took a little time off and came here to Chicago, Mike.
Are you talking about going to the Museum of Science and Industry?
Yeah, you went to the Museum of Science and Industry, which is one of my favorite places on the planet. Tell me a little bit about that. You took time off and just came here to the Museum of Science and Industry. Tell me a little about that.
Yeah, that place is really cool.
It's awesome, man. It's awesome, especially when you're a kid. It's even cooler when you're a kid.
Oh, I'm sure. I still couldn't avoid the guilt of not getting work done that day, but they had a... oh man, I forget what it was called, but it was to spend X amount of time living there and kind of documenting what you do. And it was an exhibit. So they had somebody living in the museum, and I applied to do that. I'm just like, well, that might be kind of fun. I bet I could do my work there while. And everybody who applied got a free pass. So a buddy and I went down there and just kind of explored around and checked everything out. And then back I went and back to my computer. That was my one day off in the span of, you know, almost 2 years.
I think that's so funny. I love the fact that your one day off involved coming here and going to the Museum of Science and Industry. It's just something. Something makes
that's
me.
I think most people, a typical person, would pick for their day off.
No. And it makes me proud of this city. I got to tell you, Mike. I have to tell you.
Yeah, Chicago's a great place.
It's amazing. It's a great place. Now tell everybody about how, you know, because I was talking a little bit earlier about how a lot of people choose to go to, like, Epcot, or they choose to go to Universal Studios or Disney World or some of these places that are so expensive in the pocketbook. But you can have a family adventure just by going to the national parks and save a lot of money, right, Mike?
Yeah, absolutely. They're getting slightly more expensive now. The entrance fees are going up, and they're starting to outsource a lot of the campgrounds, so those fees are going up. But beyond that, like, once you get to the park, and getting to the park too is a little expensive because they're really remote. Like, most of the big tourist attractions, like Orlando, you kind of fly in and then you're there and stay in put. But in these parks, you're driving probably hundreds of miles to get to. But yeah, once you're in them, hiking's free. They have ranger-led programs, which go anything from, like, plowing through a slough at Everglades to hiking to summits in Yellowstone and all sorts. Those are all, almost all of them are free. A few, like we mentioned, cave tours, those have a fee with them. Anything that seems like a, I don't know, maybe a little bit more of a liability on their side or a little more coordination to create, there are small nominal fees associated with them. Like some of the cave tours are $5. Some of the tours at Mesa Verde, some of the cultural sites around the country. Mesa Verde is in the southwest corner of Colorado and has a bunch of cliff dwellings and really neat cultural things, historical things. And those are like $3 to take an hour-long tour with a ranger there. They're always enthusiastic. For children, they have junior ranger programs, which are really cool. You get an activity booklet, and they usually ask you to pick up some trash, go to sites around the park that they think will be interesting to children, maybe pick up a ranger program, and then you can come back and you get sworn in as a junior ranger. It's pretty cute.
That's cool. That's cool.
Get a badge.
Yeah.
And then I think for a lot of families, I think these things are sort of intimidating, like maybe camping and then the wildlife. Everybody kind of gets scared away from bears and maybe even bison and other big mammals. But once you get in there, most people get hooked and they want to start looking around the country to what place they can go to next, staying in the outdoors and seeing these really kind of wild preserves that someone had enough foresight to protect for us.
Yeah, that's great, man. Well, listen, when is the updated version of the book coming out, Mike? What's the timetable for that?
It'll be a little bit. I'm just working on printing quotes right now. So maybe 4 or 5 months it should be out before the end of the year.
Okay, before the end of the year. But you can still get the version that I'm holding in my hand. Your Guide to the National Parks is available. We have a link on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. It's got 530 images. It's got 140 easy-to-read maps. There's hiking tables, places to stay. It covers everything. Mike, congratulations on the book, man. Really an overwhelming amount of work for one guy, I have to tell you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Nick. I really appreciate it. Okay. I appreciate you guys having me on every once in a while.
Okay, buddy. I appreciate it. Take care, man.
Yep, you too.
There you go. Mike Oswald, everybody. And the book is called Your Guide to the National Parks. It is as thorough as you can get. Here's how much it weighs. I just dropped it.
We got a lot of parks.
Yeah, we got a lot of parks. So there you go. All right.